It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. And this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And in case it sounds just a little funny, which it does, but only to an experienced ear, America's favorite soccer dad is on the road once again for the last time in this particular season and is remoting in from the luxury of his own truck, I would imagine.
I am in beautiful Winter Park, Florida.
Ooh.
It's a great day.
Ooh. Well,
yeah.
You won't get any sympathy for that.
No, it's actually very nice, except for the fact that I'm watching the game from the truck.
Yeah, well, whatever. But it is a beautiful town, nice part of the world. So, to everybody, all the regulars, welcome to the show again. Thanks for always being there at the same time, same station, as they say. And we appreciate it because it keeps us going, and we will try to continue it for a while longer. This is year 7. We have not missed yet and don't intend to. So if you're new to the show, either someone told you about it or you left your radio on or you just happened to be driving by or whatever, try to stick around for the hour. We'll talk about all kinds of fun things, and I promise out of that there's something anybody can learn. And, of course, if you don't call us, we'll just talk about all the things we want to talk about. But if you do, you can call 904-222-8255, and callers always go right to the head of the class. We will interrupt virtually anything to put your calls on. So whether they be questions about your personal finances, maybe inherited a bunch of money, or you're looking at the stock market wondering what to do, or you got to do some estate planning. There's just so many topics that we'll talk about here, and I hear them on a lot of different sources. And I would say that the average answer someone gets to a personal finance question could be rated C+ or below. You agree with that, Adam?
Yeah, I think that's about right. You hear so much. There's a lot of good sources out there, but there's also plenty of bad and irrelevant and just flat out terrible advice out there. So yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, and there are very many of them who allow callers in on a real time basis. They're mostly, I call them podcasts, pre-recorded shows, and this one does. So take advantage of us if you will, and we will always, as I say, put you to the head of the class. Well, it is another Saturday in May, and that means it's almost birthing person's day. You know, you can live a long time as I have, and you can get to a point where you're pretty sure that you can't be surprised anymore. You're wrong. So
yep.
So the new politically correct term for the person who gave birth to your child or to you is the birthing person, and I just can't think of another thing to say about that. So happy birthing person's day to Adam's mother out there who is listening. She's the one that caught this for me. Oh, man. Can't make it up. Anyway, this week in the market, a funny week to me is it felt like it would never get going, but it did.
Yeah, it sure did. And it was for weird reasons. Which I'll get to in a little bit, but it was a wild week of trading. There was a ton of economic data that came out, and there were some big moves in the market, and we had a big flop on the economic data to end the week. It was full of twists and turns this week. But for the most part, the market took all the news and digested it and reacted fairly positively. Actual results were that the large cap Dow was up just under 3%, the S&P was up 1.2%, and the NASDAQ was down 1.5% after a rally to end the week. So that actually kind of brought the NASDAQ back. It was trading significantly lower than that early in the week. The NASDAQ is now the only index trading in neutral territory. The other two are pretty overbought, but not as much as they were a couple of weeks ago. And then if you look at small caps, they're also in neutral territory after spending the first part of the year in overbought territory. So a lot of things moving around right now. On a sector basis, energy had the biggest bounce this week, gaining almost 9%, and adding to its year-to-date gains, it's now up 42% on the year. Not too bad.
Not bad.
Materials, no, not at all. Materials had a big week as well, up 6%, while consumer discretionary and real estate both saw losses of over 1%. So a little bit of movement in between the sectors this week. That's kind of been the trend all year, actually. One thing will do good one week and then perform poorly the next week. So you just never know.
Yeah, don't chase returns this year.
No, no. If you do that, you will not come out ahead. For the most part, though, equity markets around the globe were up this week. There were some notable exceptions. China struggled. They lost over 1%. And China's market is now trading more than 10% down from its 52-week high. Unlike most global markets that are pretty much at or near their 52-week high. So a lot of the world is in overbought territory right now. And despite that, there's still a lot of PE ratios that are lower than the U.S. or the S&P 500, which is at 30.3 right now, quite high. But as earnings can continue to come in, and they come in pretty well, we should see that start to come down.
Well, the degree of increase in the earnings is what's driving that up to that level, because if that keeps up, that 30.3 is going to go way down.
Yeah, it's been substantial. So I'm not too concerned about it being that high right now, when normally if we weren't in this sort of situation where we're still seeing the COVID recovery, I might be a little hesitant to look at a number that high.
Yeah, you and me.
Speaking of things that are high, commodities continue to skyrocket this week, led by agricultural goods, up over 5% just on the week. The index as a whole climbed 3.7%, and every category showed gains. Because the economic data is coming in a little bit lower than expected, or it did this week, the 10-year yield dropped about 5%. It now stands at 1.577%. That's the actual yield. So it was over 1.75. Now it's at just under 1.6. And that rate dropping is what caused the NASDAQ to go from having a terrible week to just having a bad week.
Higher rates, some salvation, eh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes you lose less by being or sometimes you win by losing less, and
exactly.
That was the case with the NASDAQ. And the reasons are pretty funny, or interesting at least. It's the bad news that's driving the NASDAQ higher, because the NASDAQ is really affected by interest rates. So if the Fed has more incentive to keep rates low and be very, very easy on their monetary policy, the NASDAQ will continue to go up. So in this case, bad news is actually good news for the NASDAQ. And as soon as I say that, though, there was a period last month where the NASDAQ was trading higher while rates were rising. So don't think that that's 100% certain theory. Just when you think you figured it out, it's going to change. So I would not trade on that theory alone.
A rule of thumb is exactly that. It's a rule of thumb, or as a wise old person once said, the existence of an exception does not disprove the rule. I think that
That's
was
correct.
Me, actually. But maybe maybe I took it from somebody. Who knows? I'm willing to do that, and I'll give credit if I ever remember who to give it to. When we get back from the break, there was a really, really unusual jobs reporting, let's say, days, since it's about three of them, and the experts missed it by a mile, but the media missed it by 100 miles, what was actually going on out there. And we will, of course, clear it up for you, as we always like to do. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Adam Van Wee from Winter Park, beautiful downtown Winter Park. First off, let's do the trivia question. What we're going into right now, we're going to talk about the jobs report. So I did a jobs trivia. This is a very strange one to me, and I think it ties into a lot of things we're about to talk about. How many thousands of American women dropped out of the workforce in April? How many thousands of women dropped out of the workforce just last month alone? And then I think you'll see how that'll patch into the big thing. Well, we started the week. Oh, by the way, trivia brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. At least I can do is thank Kenny. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. All right. On Wednesday, the whole jobs fiasco started with an ADP number that I thought was reasonably impressive at 742,000, but Bloomberg thought it should be about 850,000, so of course it was a miss. So that makes two things that Bloomberg thought that I would take umbrage with. One of them was the actual jobs number, and the other one was that he is never going to become the president of the United States. Enough said. Carry on.
I mentioned the big flop when I was doing the beginning of the market wrap, and the big flop was the jobs report.
Yep.
It was, I mean, so if you dig in, it wasn't that terrible.
Exactly.
But the headline number was certainly well below expectations, which were pretty sky high at 1 million new jobs. Mm-hmm. And the actual number was about a quarter of that at 266,000. And then the unemployment rate actually ticked up for the first time in a while, going from 6 to 6.1%. And the good news was cash earnings rose 0.7% and weekly hours rose to 35, which tied an all-time high. So people that are working are making more money because they're getting paid more and they're working more hours. And that's great news. The real downside to that, though, is that there's so many people who aren't working because the government continues to pay them to sit at home. And just anecdotally, I went to Dunkin' Donuts this morning right before I was doing my show prep, and the first thing I see when I walk in is a sign saying, please excuse how slow we are. We can't find anyone to show up for work.
Yeah, I believe it. Adam, hang on a second. We have an old friend on the line. Captain Dave.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Never better. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I have a couple of questions, one of which is, I guess, theoretical. How is it that we all know that inflation is really serious and you can only get 50 basis points on your savings?
Well, because how do you kill 11 million people? You ever read the book? You lie to them. And who's lying to us now? Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve, most of the economists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, it is definitely here. And if you want proof, I will give it to you. I tore open an envelope this morning at my desk, came in yesterday from my homeowners insurance people. And how about 32.1% increase?
And they want to make you put a new roof on your house.
Yeah, I already did that, thank goodness. And that all they did was take back what they gave me for the roof thing. Yeah. 32%, this is thousands of dollars we're talking about here. And it's every single thing you do, from filling up your gas tank to going to the grocery store. And you ain't seen nothing yet, according to everything I read about the grocery store. That's just getting started. So how is it? Because everybody's lying. That's the only thing I can tell you.
When somebody says the emperor has no clothes, what happens?
The emperor gets very chilly. And hopefully it will be dethroned.
Are we going to have sudden massive inflation? Like, are we going to go back to stagflation?
Do you see a way around it?
No, I really don't. But at least during stagflation, the interest rates on liquidity is pretty good. I mean, you could get 18% on a certificate in those days, even though the inflation was 21 or something.
Right. Yeah, and you know what? It was funny back then. It was shown that people would rather make 12% on their money in a 14% inflation than to make 2% on their money in a 1% inflation.
Yeah, well, that's a monkey grabbing for a bigger banana.
you got that right.
Anyway, so I don't know, I'm keeping my eye on it. It just doesn't make any sense. Somewhere it's got to explode. It just can't. I don't know. Or maybe we've reached a point with the neural net that it never will. It'll just keep on going on. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. But and what would your investment advice be? Tips and stuff?
Yeah. Adam, you might want to touch on what is it you're buying mostly to handle this thing?
Well, for the inflation side, I mean, things that love inflation tend to be real estate tips. Stocks in general, it's not inflation that kills them. It's the rising interest rate. So the companies love inflation because they can pass it on to consumers and increase their profit margins. And especially in a good economy like this, they're getting price increases. So it's actually helping them. But you do have to be careful with that, because when the Fed does start to come around and be realistic, it's not going to be fun, because they're going to have to raise rates eventually. It just has to happen. We can't stay at zero forever.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't cook the books forever. I mean,
yeah, you wonder when they're going to run out. Biden's up to $10 trillion now in his proposals for spending money. Do you see how that compared to 1.9, which is only half spent so far, see how that might cause a little problem out there?
Yeah, well, maybe someday they'll have to declare another jubilee like the Hebrews did, and there won't be any debt for a while. But
it's called the Great Reset. A lot of people think it's coming sooner. I don't know when it's going to come. We've been predicting it for 10 years.
Another quick question and opinion. I keep getting things, advertisements for whatever reason, on like three-year annuities.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this thing? What can you? I'll take the call off the air, off the phone. But what the heck is a three-year annuity?
Well, is that a 3 years till it pays, or a three-year payout?
That's a three-year payout. It's almost like they're
okay. So, it's simple. You give them their money, and they'll give you a third back each year. How's that sound?
I guess.
Which side of that?
I know it had to be a scam. I mean, annuities in general.
Oh, they'll promise you a little return, because they know interest rates are going up and that kind of thing. They might promise you 1% or 2% back for each year that you're in it. But remember, that's on the declining balance, too.
So, yeah, well, I don't know. Stan said so many times, it's just a substitute for a CD. So
exactly. The other Stanism I really like is, why do all the insurance companies have those big, beautiful buildings?
Because the annuity money.
You got it.
All right, guys. Listen, you have a great weekend, and it's always talking to you.
Good talk to you, too.
Take care.
Bye. And next. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
What's happening?
How is everybody?
Well, very well, thank you. And you?
Oh, hanging in there. Just getting ready for birthing rights day tomorrow. Yeah.
Hey, bake a cake.
Exactly. I'm going to take a couple of moments, I'll take a shot at the trivia.
But of course.
And then I'd like to ask one question, if it's possible.
Cool.
All right, first a trivia question. How many birthing persons have left the workforce since April?
Potential birthing persons.
Potential. Since April. I'm going to say 165,000.
Aha, you've been on the internet.
I've been on Fortune.
Aha.
Fortune magazine had an article about that.
Yep, that is exactly right. 165,000. Due mostly to, they think, the lack of an ability to get your children taken care of back in schools and things like that. They're running out of money because they haven't been able to work. They can't hire nannies, and the kids are still home. And rather than trying to look for work in an impossible environment for them personally, no matter how good the job market is, they just can't. And that's what's going on out there. It's a government problem partly, too, because they're making so much money in unemployment.
Absolutely. That's been the subject for the longest time, about all these checks, a lot of these stimulus checks, and the helping Americans was warranted,
right,
in my opinion, especially for small businesses. Unfortunately, a lot of people got money that shouldn't have got money, and the subject now is people just don't want to go back to work, and they claim that there's help wanted signs everywhere.
Yep.
Also, this President Biden, he wants to, it seems like he, with all the printing of money he's doing, he wants to do this America Family Plan, where they just want to start taking care of your kids from the age of three onwards. And part of that is, I guess, having an increase in child care.
Yep. Okay, we've got a minute left. What's your question?
I was just going to ask about, we were talking commodities and being an electrician by trade, copper as a commodity. Yep. There's a lot of talk about copper being something to look into because of the Green Deal.
It's at an all-time high this week. Amazing, isn't it?
All right.
So, yeah, you're right. We'll be talking more about that, too.
Very good. Thank you, Jeff.
I'm going to put you on hold so we can get your address, and we'll send you a little something.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Cameron. All right, we've got a few seconds before we go over to the other side. But right after the break, we'll come back, and we'll get a little down in the weeds with that jobs report. There's a whole bunch that they're not telling you out there, and it will add a little insight. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have quite a bit left to say. So I'm going to jump right into this. First off, should remind everybody that the trivia question has been solved. 165,000 women left the workforce, mostly white and Hispanic. Anyway. On Thursday, one of the more or less overlooked numbers was the unemployment claims, which fell below 500,000 for the first time since the pandemic. I thought that deserved a little notice, didn't you?
Yeah, that was really good to see. It's been trending that direction for a while, right. And obviously the rate of decrease has slowed way, way down from early on when it was over a million and coming down pretty rapidly. But still, progress in the right direction. Hope to see that number back in the sub 200,000 category here before too long.
Yep. The biggest miss from the media, I guess, was on Friday. And they did report the headline numbers for the establishment survey at 266,000. But what they didn't report was that number is seasonally adjusted. Now, the pre-seasonally adjusted number, in other words, the actual number of people who went to work, was 1,089,000. Now, that big discrepancy is, I think, partly explained by seasonally adjusted numbers because April's a good month, but I think it's partly missed in this case, too. And I think the reason was that anything that happens in the next cycle of things that involves smoothing or adjusting or anything, look what happened a year ago. When you compare April in 21 to April of 20, I don't know how you could come up with a satisfactory seasonal adjustment. So what I'm saying is that it was closer to what people expected, and it tends to explain quite a bit of the error between the ADP number and the headline number. Because that's just way, way more than you normally see in those two numbers. So I guess my version of this would be, and I think, Adam, you alluded to this right away, that it wasn't that bad, people.
No, it wasn't as bad as the headline number. And the biggest thing to me was that the increase for leisure and hospitality was 331,000. Yeah. So that's the last part of the economy, really, that's opening up. And it's good to see people flooding back in droves to those jobs because that means that life is getting back to normal as the vaccine rollout continues, although that's taken a major blow with the J&J pause a few weeks ago.
Right.
The numbers are just really, really declining. Number of people getting vaccines, I think they freaked everyone out enough that people are hesitant now. So it's that was a bad move, in my opinion. But it's good to see people going back to work and reopening restaurants and bars and travel. And I know we're all looking forward to doing more of that.
Yeah, and concurrent with the 165,000 women that left the workforce was another 400,000 something, I think. I didn't write down the exact number. But another big bunch actually entered the workforce. The participation rate went up 0.2%, which is a large, large one-month move. So yeah, you got to take some of this with a grain of salt.
The other thing in the numbers is that if you look at who it is that's dropping out of the workforce, it is largely people without college degrees. And those people tend to have jobs that pay closer to that $600 a week than people with college degrees. So by and large, it's people making the decision, at least the data tells us this, making the decision to stay home and maybe take care of their kids and get paid to do so rather than going back to work. And I don't blame them. I mean, if you have that option. And yeah, especially if your kids aren't allowed to go back to school yet. So
people are rational in general.
Yeah, it would make perfect sense. So it's ironic to me that the same administration that wants to provide more free child care for your kids won't open schools. That is the single biggest child care available in the free child care available in the U.S. today.
Exactly.
It makes no sense.
No, not to me either. So the only big remaining question to me on the whole economy thing is, should Biden take credit for it or not? He doesn't know whether to take credit or to say it's Trump's fault or my credit or whatever because it's on the fence. All he knows is we've got to spend a bunch more money.
That is for sure.
Yeah.
We absolutely got to spend more money. Yeah.
Let's beat that horse no more, shall we say? All right. Who Am I That Got Rich in America series? What do you got?
Yeah, this is a good one. This is someone who wasn't necessarily born into poverty, but he wasn't born into wealth either. He was born in New Jersey in 1931, which fell during the Great Depression, and he was very blue-collar Irish-American parents. And what makes this person so amazing isn't the situation that he managed to overcome, but rather what he did once he achieved that great success. So many people think that people become billionaires by stepping on the backs of others, that they're greedy, that they don't deserve the money. But this person, if this person doesn't change her mind, I would be shocked. He started his entrepreneurial ways in the 1950s when he was an Air Force radio operator during the Korean War. He began selling duty-free liquor to U.S. Navy personnel in Mediterranean ports. Well, he quickly realized that selling tax-free liquor to sailors was pretty much a no-brainer.
Duh.
So he teamed up with a classmate from Cornell, which he attended on the GI Bill, and turned this idea into a business called DFS, or the Duty Free Shoppers Group. They began operations in Hong Kong on November 7, 1960. By the mid-1990s, DFS was distributing profits of $300 million per year to the partners, and they sold the business in 1996 to a French conglomerate for $1.63 billion. This deal is what caused the story to get interesting. The payout from the sale went to the other partners, but the portion that should have gone to our billionaire was actually paid out to something called the Atlantic Philanthropies. As it turned out, our billionaire wasn't actually a billionaire because he had secretly transferred his ownership in the company to his foundation in 1984, so 12 years earlier. None of the partners knew that he did not own a single share of the company. For years, it turns out, he had been funneling the profits from the business into the charity and giving it all away, requiring that the beneficiaries not reveal the source of the donations. Over the course of his life, this man has given away more than $8 billion, and he didn't want a single accolade for it. $3.7 billion went to education, $870 million went to human rights, $700 million went to healthcare, and the list goes on. Today, he has a small apartment in San Francisco and lives off the $2 million he and his wife set aside for retirement. He certainly isn't poor, but he certainly isn't a billionaire after giving away 375,000% more money than his current net worth.
Jeez.
Frequently referred to as the James Bond of philanthropy, Chuck Feeney built a global empire of duty-free shops and funneled all the profits into his foundation. He then gave away every cent of that money to charity and shuttered the foundation in 2020, having completed his mission while he was still alive. Absolutely incredible.
Huh. That's very interesting. Who would have thought? Duty-free shops, they just exist, don't they? Nobody actually
made them. Yeah. It was a huge business. $300 million a year in the 90s. That's a lot of cash.
A chunk of change. And that was a great way for him not to recycle a bunch of that back to Washington, D.C., too.
There's that. But I don't think that was really his goal.
No, I don't. It doesn't sound like a tax saving thing at all, and I just hope it went to to people who did good and did well both with it. Wait, what'd you say the name was?
His name is Chuck Feeney.
I don't know that I would ever have heard of him. Quite amazing. Okay, good story. And when we come back, a lot of you know, and we've been talking about the Secure Act 2.0, which is one of the two things that was, well, 2.0 was not passed, but Secure Act 1.0 was one of the outcomes of the whole pandemic thing, the CARES Act and the Secure Act. And Secure deals with retirement things. And a lot of you know pretty much what did happen, but there were a lot of other things that we weren't sure about. Well, now the new one just got out of committee, so I'm going to tell you the good and the bad and the ugly out of that one and what to watch for right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Tell your birthing person happy day. And this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. And as we like to say, let Troy do it. Works for me. One quick little headline that caught my eye this week. Noted economist Elizabeth Warren has denied that inflation is a problem. Quote, it just hasn't happened. Now, my question to the good senator from Massachusetts is, when was the last time you went to the grocery store for yourself or your family? When was the last time you filled up your own gas tank? When was the last time you opened an envelope from your insurance company with a new premium in it? I'm telling you, Liz, it's happening. And I don't think
maybe she just meant it wasn't a problem for her because she's super wealthy.
Yes. Thank you. You just cleared it right up. Huh. Gee, good to be wealthy, I guess. All right, Secure Act 2.0 update. Last November, I wrote a blog on our website on the 23rd, I believe it was, describing what we hoped would happen with the new Secure 2.0 because there were some things I really liked about it. Well, as you remember, after November 3rd last year, the Congress was way too busy to do things like, you know, passing laws and having hearings and all that stuff because they were too busy trying to get the election in, well, each side, I guess, could go their own way. So Secure 2.0, which had been introduced in Congress, died on the vine. Thankfully, there are some good people out there who care about it, and I've got to give credit where it's due. I think his name is Richard Neal, I'm not sure, Democrat from, I believe, Massachusetts, actually, is the guy who's bird-dogging this thing. And even though I know there's an ulterior motive because this is very good for the insurance companies, and that's who's pushing it, and he's probably got some connections there. But that's just speculation, and I'll jump over it. He is bird-dogging this thing, and I'm very grateful to all the people who are. The concept passed, that the Secure and Secure 2 passed out of committee with absolutely no whimpers, and the Secure and the CARES were almost unanimously passed in 2020 when the problem was there and people actually had to talk to each other and get things done. So this has now come out again. But along the deliberative path, since he introduced it this year, some changes were made. And the changes were, and here's where it gets sticky for me. They made some changes that will save money. And in other words, it'll decrease the cost of the bill. Now, everybody knows that Washington, D.C. owns all the money in the world, all of your money, all of your income and everything. So when they let you have a little more of it, it increases their costs. They call the term they use is tax expenditure, and it means something less than 100% of your money we're taking. That part is an expenditure, what you get to keep. So they wanted to reduce the cost of the bill, and here's some things that happened. Not everything's bad. I'm going to set you up for this. I don't want you to think the whole thing is bad. Secure 1 repealed the age limits for the traditional IRA contributions. So no longer could you no longer contribute after age 70 and a half. You can do any age now. That has not changed. And all you have to do, just like before, is have earned income either your own or from a spouse. The second thing, it raised the required minimum distribution age, which they call the RBD, or required beginning age, from 70 and a half to 72. That's in effect for all people born after June 30th, 1949. The original bill would have jumped that age from 72 to 75 on January 1, but it was revised to save money. So what happens now in this bill, in 2.0, is that on January 1 of 2022, the required beginning date will be 73, and in 2027, it'll jump again to 74, and in 2032, it'll become 75. So that'll only affect people born after June 30th, 1959, I believe, maybe 60. I haven't figured out the math yet on it. But those of us, the 1949, late 49, and 1950 babies who've been sneaking along here, getting our RBDs down, we got one more year. Now, it only affects maybe 20% of the people in the age group, because most people have to take the money to live anyway. That's why they set it up. But for those of you who have chosen, as I have, to keep working, that's just another year where your account can get bigger and your income can stay lower. It's a wonderful thing. You know that 1.0 repealed and replaced the stretch IRAs for beneficiaries. They did not, unfortunately, address that one, so far as I can tell, in 2.0. And then smaller required minimums for all, that was actually addressed last year as part of the negotiations. But in 2022, in other words, January 1, the new tables, IRS life expectancy tables on which RMDs are based, they go into effect, and it takes account of an increased lifespan. So RMDs are going to go down for everyone under the new table in 2022. That has not been changed. Catch-up contributions. Now, here's what made me do this piece today, and I am unhappy with what I know so far, and I don't think they're going to be able to pacify me either. Catch-up contributions. This is the area that says if you're 50 and a half, you can add more money to your contribution every year. It can be $1,000 in RMDs, that kind of thing. And that was great. And they added a nice new little kicker in there. I haven't found out how much yet, but for people ages 62, 3, and 4, the catch-up contribution is even higher. So you got 3 years to add more if you're currently 61. That's a great thing, too. But then all of a sudden, here's a little phrase that caught my eye. All catch-up contributions must be made on a Roth basis. What that means, in case you're not getting a kick in the eye on this thing, it means whatever you put in when you're able to now, over 59 and a half, that means you can't deduct that catch-up contribution anymore. This is what I mean. What they blindsided us on this thing, and they're picking more of the money out of our pockets by doing this. What was deductible is no longer deductible, and the new part is not deductible as well for the 62, 3, and 4. Now, here's where this gets a little weird, and I haven't read it yet. But what about, okay, you say it's on a Roth basis. Now, does that mean I can put it in a Roth IRA? Even if my income's so high that I couldn't put it in a Roth IRA, can I do that?
Or are you going to have to commingle your funds?
Exactly.
That's a terrible idea.
Isn't it? You can see exactly where I'm going with this thing. What happens if you can put it in a Roth IRA is it and all the earnings on it are forever tax-free when you take them out. But what happens when you commingle funds? Now you got a whole other set of record keeping. Now you're not going to do it. Pardon me?
It's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. And this is going to apply, I gather, to 403Bs, 401Ks. So every employer that has one of these things now has a whole new set of bookkeeping to do. And when you get to a retirement age and you have an account like that, if you've got a couple of undeducted contributions in there, you can break that apart, but you can only break out the contributed portion. So you've lost now the ability to shelter the growth on all, on the excess contributions. This is an absolute joke. Only I'm not laughing.
It gets worse, too, because the benefit of a Roth comes with time. And if you're making catch-up contributions, by definition, you don't have time. And so you're really losing the big benefit of a Roth, which is the amount, the growth over time. And I just don't, I hate this idea. It's terrible.
I knew it would whap you about as much as it did me. This is the kind of stuff, if you care to contact Washington, D.C., any of your congressman or senator or anything, I would like to see them get it amended somehow. Maybe it would happen on the Senate floor. Maybe it would happen on the House floor. Maybe they're going to have to reconcile all this. The problem is what came out of committee last time passed with something like 417 votes in the House, and I fear this one's going to be railroaded through too, because the complexity that Adam and I were just talking about is not something that lay people understand. And by the way, if you use a tax preparer that is not a financial planner, might be a good time to call them before anything happens to the contrary, because this is going to be new. But I will keep you posted, I promise. All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Good trip home, Adam. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.